So forgive me if I'm a little bit less articulate than I normally am.
I'm a bit dusty.
Okay. One day after Australia had nationwide rallies for free speech, planning it and doing the rally itself, and then today going through lots of footage, lots of photos.
It takes a toll, bro. It's like mental health.
No. A rousing success. Excellent. Excellent turnout. Excellent messaging. Excellent speakers. But a really interesting result media-wise is in the coverage, as there seems to be like this weird blackout. The most minuscule amount of reporting for what is otherwise a historic rally in Australia for freedom of speech. I think the main sort of part that we're going to talk about tonight is why it's historic and why there's the march and what it's calling for. This media part is very interesting because I think it like is intertwined with its importance and what's going on. Australia has never had enshrined in our constitution freedom of speech, a First Amendment, whatever the case is, like they've got in America, or, you know, a bit more solid outlining of speech protections and political protections in other European democracies. What we have instead is implied rights to political expression and freedom. It's implied through our constitution that the people can choose parliament, they can choose their representatives. So we live in a representative democracy, which means the ideas of the people can be represented potentially in a democracy. They can vote for them. And through this, we get our implied rights to political expression. But otherwise, the sort of door's been left open to just crack down on freedom of speech because there is no like constitutional barrier to it necessarily, apart from that implied right. And so what has happened in the last year is that effectively since August 31st last year to now, there has been a complete realignment in Australian politics. Around this time last year, on the 31st of last year, Pauline Hanson, for example, our supposed far right populist leader of One Nation, she was making videos complaining about the paper bags at Woolworths and Coles, complaining about plastic versus paper bags at the supermarket. That's a good like microcosm of Australian politics in just how sort of futile it felt engaging in it. When, you know, elected representatives or like, you know, prospective elected representatives were just talking about plastic bags, right? Non-civilizational matters, non-demographic matters, things that are just like tantamount to just tabloid fluff. And even like our establishment parties, the big debate they were having was on renewable versus nuclear energy, and politics was like super boring, super disengaging. But also there's like a gaping hole in our political discourse of something that Australians wanted to hear about and wanted to have debated and wanted to have expressed. And that was their discontent with mass immigration. And even the likes of, I believe it's like Bob Carr, he is like signed up on essays that, you know, would suggest there was a long-standing sort of agreement between the major parties, Liberal and Labor, to not discuss immigration, because if they did, it would result in a race to the bottom on migration numbers because of Australians like just severe discontent with migration. But whatever the case was, it was just like missing from our political discourse. And instead what was there was just extremely disengaging, extremely boring, such that most Australians, I would say, for the last 20 years, have almost been more engaged with American politics for a large part. Like more Australians probably know about the inner workings of like, you know, the latest headlines around Trump than they do Albanese, or they did what Peter Dutton was doing during the election campaign. Like people were just tuned out because what was important to them wasn't being expressed. It all felt like a bit futile. But on August 31st last year, there was the March for Australia, which was just about ending mass immigration. That was it. And also, it was talking about immigration in terms that the establishment was never entertaining. So insofar as they did talk about immigration, it was always skill shortages, international students as part of our, you know, education sector as an export, good for our economy, all economic terms. So any debate there was to be had on migration was basically one that affirmed its importance. Maybe the debate was like, oh, there's too many Uber drivers, we need more skilled immigrants. It wasn't talking about the numbers or where they're coming from. And so the March for Australia sort of did two things. It first propelled the mass immigration debate to the forefront of Australian politics by putting that many bodies on the street to demand its cessation, that it had to be in the media, it had to be in the headlines, it had to be spoken about. And those who didn't march saw their, you know, fellow patriots march and they felt sort of empowered. And so people started talking about it, the media started talking about it, social media, it just like ignited this, the flame from the accelerant, which was already there, which was this discontent with mass immigration, you know, going around your own city feeling like you're a minority, your children going to school and being bullied because they're white, the housing prices, stagnant wages. I mean, all these things is a powder keg. But the secondary part of what the March for Australia did is it sort of changed the way that the immigration debate in Australia was framed from the purely economic, right, talking about skilled versus student migration, whatever the case was, to like, okay, the culture, the demographics, the origins, like the racial nature, really. It was like an expression fundamentally of like the racial anxiety of white Australia. So it was sort of thrusted out of the hands of the Uni Party, who, you know, A, wouldn't talk about migration, or would rarely talk about it, and B, when they did, it was something that itself was disinteresting to the public. It didn't really address most of their concerns. And it put it into this, at the time, a void of like, who's going to pick up the crown of just like this anti-immigration sentiment that's spilling out of the Uni Party left and right. And that happened to be One Nation. Pauline went from talking about those plastic and paper bags to, I guess, just talking about immigration. And obviously, she was perceived to be, as well, the very radical brand. As moderate as she tries to make herself out to be now, the public perception of her is of a radical, is of a racist, is of, you know, as the media reports her, someone who laments the end of the white Australia policy. And it's sort of emblematic of a public perception that she inherits this, like, radical disillusionment. Because really what she is just, like, a conservative. Honestly, like, I mean, she started in the Liberal Party. She could probably still be there nowadays under Taylor. But she's otherwise inherited this, like, quite carnal, quite, you know, if we have to borrow the word, racist. Energy. That's what she's inherited right now. And so that's sort of the March for Australia's effect last year. And we're still seeing the windfall of those changes, still seeing One Nation rising continuously in the polls or bolstering its position in the polls, the Uni Party sort of flailing a bit. And so that gets me to the free speech rally a year later. Why did it go from mass immigration to free speech? Why did the March for Australia do that? Well, it's because the establishment, the Uni Party, recognized what had happened. They're not dumb. They have analysts. Labor's got Redbridge, Costamaris. It's like they're able to actually understand what's happening in the electorate. And sure enough, they were probably told exactly what I've just told you. And so there's been sort of two strategies of the Uni Party that we're seeing play out in real time. And we'll use Labor as an example because I think it's a very clear-cut case. Labor has, over the last year, moderated much of the sort of wokeness it's otherwise expressed in the years past. They recently had their national conference. So the conference has delegates, right, from the Labor left, Labor right, the unions, other people who can vote at this conference appear. And sort of before the conferences, they usually talk to the media about what we're going to try and put forward, what we're going to try to have a vote on, and what the direction of the party we want to take is. And the unions, for the large part, were saying some super woke stuff, like they wanted to retry the voice referendum or something, or just do it anyways and like legislate it anyway. They wanted to change the Australian flag. A bunch of these things, right, that were just like very woke, very, the years gone by before August 31st coded. And Albanese, the analysts of Redbridge and such, have his ear and they've been telling him, hey, the woke stuff is going away. It's the time of populism. Like Australians are actually racist. Like, whoops, we called them racist settler colonialists for decades and now they actually are like stepping into that identity. Uh-oh. And so Albanese was very quick to shut down the wokeness in his party, very quick to tell the unions, no, we're not changing the flag, and the voice, like, stop. Basically, he marginalized this debate at the conference as much as possible. Even, for example, the foreign policy debate on like Israel and Gaza, they left to like the last day, first thing in the morning, for like an hour. And like, so of course that was a fizzle. Albanese was trying to like sort of enter like a bit more of an authoritarian like leader status within his own party, even though he's from Labor left. He allied with the Labor right to just shut all this debate down and sort of appear to be more right-leaning, appear to not be the absolute dichotomy of One Nation. And we're still seeing this effect even more recently with Tony Burke, the Minister for Home Affairs, obviously Labor. He was planning on giving a speech at the National Press Club on proposed migration cuts under Labor. And this might even include the refugee intake. It would include students. It was going to be a pretty big overhaul for Labor standards. I guess in political terms, it would have been, or poll size terms, a shift to the right of Labor's migration policy. This is the evolution we're seeing in Australian politics. This is the first thing I'm talking about, is these parties were in response to One Nation's rise and were skin-suiting and emulating it a bit, channeling that same racist energy that propelled One Nation. And again, I say racist just to borrow the term. It's just a shorthand, right? I'm like, One Nation's racist. I'm like, oh yeah, One Nation's racist. So they were trying to skin-suit that a bit and steal that energy from One Nation. And that was like their principal strategy. But something a bit more sinister was happening at the same time. Sort of bubbling just beneath the surface was them essentially trying to legislate away the conditions that led to One Nation's rise. So what I mean by this is, if racism is fueling the rise of One Nation and whatever the case is, then make it illegal. And pass hate speech laws, pass vilification laws, make it very difficult to articulate an anti-immigration position without going to jail, without facing like civil penalties. And so they're tying up activists, blah, 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 blah. And then they banned political parties. They banned the White Australia Party, effectively placing the stake of the right wing at One Nation's doorstep, saying this is as far right as you can go before you become a prohibited hate group, which of course is pretty scary if you're One Nation, because it's like, okay, so if we step to the right a little bit, we're going to get banned as well. And then very recently, Penny Wong was kind of signaling to that. She was saying One Nation is a threat to national security, because it undermines our social cohesion. And it's like, whoa. So we're already talking about banning One Nation. These are our two things that the Uni Party Labor is doing. The Uni Party, especially Labor, is doing. Which is A, sort of playing the democracy game of, One Nation's rising. Well, why is that? Oh, okay, racism. Okay, I guess we'll entertain it a little bit. And the second side, which they're not obviously saying, is let's just ban it. Let's just rug pull democracy. This is ridiculous. And so this is why 30th yesterday, we had to march for freedom of speech. Because if you are one nation all the way to the white Australia, whatever the case is, it is now in your best interest to start advocating for free speech, particularly a referendum on it, to enshrine it in our constitution. So the Uni Party, so Labor can't in their death throes stop us from ever, you know, even one nation to a degree in the policy that the policy set they have now from ever existing in parliament. We, you know, it sounds a bit ludicrous, but again, for Penny Wong to suggest that one nation is a threat to national security, that's significant. If something is a threat to national security, it's a threat to the country's like sort of core existence and stability. That calls into mind extraordinary powers the government, the deep state, whatever the case is, has to ensure continuity. Because if you say someone is a threat to the existence of Australia, the security at its core of the nation, usually you're trying to give yourself the right to employ extraordinary measures to arrest that issue, that threat, destroy it. And so that's sort of the fighting words that Penny Wong was using. So it's not ridiculous to say, even in like the near future, oh, one nation, you know, could fall under these laws and get banned. It's like, they're kind of already talking about it, if you think about it. And so the free speech rally was all about enshrining in our constitution a right to freedom of speech. And of course, the rally can't just do that. You can't just get enough people in the street and bang, it's in the constitution. The point is that you sort of raise public consciousness around the matter and you get people talking about it. And just like August 31st last year, the more people talk about it, it reverberates in the media, it becomes a national conversation, and then it's the crown on the ground for some party to pick up, put it in their head, and develop the issue. So on August 31st, that was with mass immigration from the rallies, propelled that into the national conversation, crown in the gutter, one nation picks it up, they inherit that success. You can do that with free speech. Make it a national issue, point out why it's a problem all of a sudden. Again, because this is not a debate we've been having for a long time, at least seriously. We're having it seriously now because it's come under threat from Labor, particularly in the last year. And so the model would be similar. Create national conversation, create discourse, make it a national issue, crown the gutter, someone can pick it up and campaign on that issue. And then tentatively, depending on their winning, they can then legislate various policy to either, you know, in the case of mass immigration, end it, in the case of free speech, enshrine it in the constitution, which is, by the way, one nation's own policy. One Nation's policy is to have a free speech referendum. So the rally itself was kind of like rallying on One Nation's own policies. So that was the purpose of our rally. But that's why it's quite conspicuous that the media hasn't actually been reporting on the rally. And I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist. I know I said this right at the start that, you know, I've been making fun of conspiracy theorists lately and whatever the case is, but this is seriously weird. I'll even pull up the desktop just to show what I'm talking about and how strange this is. Yo, sorry to interrupt your viewing of just my awesome monologue, but I'm just here to say, if you'd like to support the channel, please make sure to subscribe, leave a comment, share the video. And if you want to go a step further, you can head to my site. And there are other options, of course, financially to support and the various other social medias I have. There are options there available to you if you would like to become a member or make a one-off donation. But of course, subscribing, commenting, sharing, that goes a long way. Let's get back to it. So we go here on the desktop. You can see I'm looking up March for Australia and I'm going to press the news tab on Google. Go tools. I'm going to sort by the past week. The first article, quote unquote, that comes up is a Reuters Connect picture. So this is like something you can like buy, like it's a photo you can, it's licensable. So if you want to pay some money to get this photo, you can do that. For the nationwide free speech rallies that have just taken place with tens of thousands of patriots across the country, speakers like the former leader of the Labor Party, Mark Latham, Brian Marlow from Revive Australia, John Ruddock, Libertarian, Barclay McGain, Ozmax, myself, Lisa Jane Spencer, Bass Blondie, like list goes on. A picture you could buy is a top article. Second article, the Canberra Times. Anti-migration rally turns on Hanson. What anti-migration rally? Third article. Oh, it's another picture we can buy. Fourth article. Australia urged to accelerate a national roadmap for AI and healthcare. What is going on? Bruh. Am I tripping? Am I the conspiracy theorist? Tell me I ain't tripping. Hey, cut, tell me I ain't tripping, bruh. Where are the articles at? Scrolling down. Bruno Mars, The Romantic Tour. Oh, here's one that's kind of tangentially related. Channel 10 reporter shoved to the ground by cops at one of the rallies. Doesn't say that in the headline. Another article, crane driver's court date after punching cops in protest mix-up. And then Bruno Mars, for some reason. Why is Bruno... Australia's greenhouse gas... What is going on? Tell me that's not weird. I'm actually going and say there's no articles. How else do you actually explain this? Virtually every capital city, Tasmania missed out. Sorry about that. Again, like there's pretty controversial people like Joel Davis gave a speech. Where's the Sharon Grotch? Hello? Earth to Sharon Grotch. Mark Latham gave a speech. Hello, Earth to Saturday Paper. Hello, Saturday Paper. Mark Latham gave a speech. Hello, Frank Chung. I gave a speech, bro. Like, what is going on? But someone pointed out, John Smith points out, media finally realize, reporting our stuff promotes our stuff. And so I think that's where this point sort of goes. Is it's like, is there a media blackout by some directive, some conspiracy, because the rally pertains a little bit into raising awareness around freedom of speech insofar as it's being legislated away with these hate speech laws, particularly on the matter of Labor banning a political party, the White Australia Party, and the High Court case, the hearing, the initial hearing for that, not the decision that will come some weeks later, but the sort of arguments are to be heard on September 9th. You have this whole nationwide free speech rally and like no one wants to, and the media don't want to touch that. It's gone big online, trending on, it's big on X, Instagram, like 100,000, millions of views, frankly, across the platforms. Like it happens, like people know about it. Even the journalists I spoke to a couple, and this one reporter, even she was like, yeah, I was there and they're not posting my stuff. She was like, I'm surprised like news.com isn't even like flooding the internet with articles about it. She's like, yeah, actually, that is a bit weird. But I haven't received a directive not to report on it. The newsroom probably hasn't. That's, even the journalists, that's when you know it's bad, when MSM journalists are like scratching their heads. They were talking about, or maybe it's a chilling effect of some of these hate laws that affect the way things can be reported in the media. But no one has answers. I don't know. I feel like I'm going crazy about that. And like, it would make sense if you're ever going to pull the lever of like not letting a rally get into the media, it would be the one that is trying to bolster public support against measures taken by the government to basically usurp democracy. Like if they're going to go that far to like end democracy and start banning political parties, wouldn't they just like start doing stuff to the media as well? The media, which by the way is bankrolled to the tunes of tens of millions of dollars by Labor, I should say the government. I personally can't find an explanation for that. Didn't cause enough outrage, the freedom of speech thing, but you had like an Antifa like skirmish in Melbourne. That's an article you can do. Latham gave a speech. That's surely an article. It is just very strange. I feel like it was successful regardless, like even if the media isn't like going ham on it. I think it drove a lot of attention online. I was seeing like random conservative accounts otherwise don't like, we're actually saying very good things about it and just sort of promoting it. And I think the fact that it happened was a good sort of salience test. I think it was painful because I found out after the fact, a lot of guys were blackpilling about the numbers. No one's going to go. No one supports free speech. We aren't getting them to support free speech in the abstract principle for the sake of free speech, because that you could probably say truly doesn't really have any salience for the broader electorate. And the sort of point of that is that we had never really had the debate of free speech ignited in Australia throughout the country's history, maybe around the Communist Party banning, whatever the case was in some regard, but otherwise we haven't. And that's because it hasn't been under threat like it is under now. And I want to talk about why that is the case. Why is it under threat now? Obviously, One Nation's rise, yes. One Nation's rise is the reason that the state is sort of freaking out a bit and trying to legislate away the far right, legislate away the right wing, legislate away the right wing's rise and the activist who calls it, and just sort of smother the right wing under this, like, tying them up in hate speech laws. Yes, that's one element of it. As I alluded to earlier with Penny Wong talking about national security, there is like a broader meta-political argument and conclusions to be drawn here. Penny Wong's logic is this. So our foreign minister, she was born in Malaysia. She's a foreign minister, but our minister for home affairs, Penny Wong, her argument is essentially this. Australia is a nation of nations, Indians, Chinese, right? We are situated in Asia. Our neighbors are India and China. The reason why we have mass immigration from India and China is to increase our relations, our bilateral ties with India and China. The more Indians that live here, the more favorably and better connected we are to India. If you start calling into question the benefit of that, if you start calling into question multiculturalism and the continuous inflow of millions of Indians, that's going to agitate the millions of Indians living here. That's going to agitate the millions of Chinese living here. Indonesian, whatever the case is, it's going to cause a bit of like internal division. So you're better off just shutting up. Penny Wong's argument, in a word, is that. It's that critiquing immigration is offensive to immigrants or descendants of immigrants, so don't talk about it. That's the argument. I'm barely even paraphrasing there. And so if you take that logic, and she's also saying, well, if you cease the continued migration from India and China, then India and China might not treat us better and we might be more in a more hostile neighborhood than we presently are, which is funny because considering all the immigration we've had from China, they're still pretty hostile to us. But anyways, if you take her logic and then like invert it, it's like, hang on, we're having to sign away our sovereignty, sign away our ability to make decisions about our own demographic future and of Australians to control that and to question mass immigration or question the places immigration is coming from and the quantity. We have to trade that away. We have to, in part, become Little India, Little China, so we can have a more peaceful time in our sort of part of the neighborhood. That is the inverse of national security. That is the inverse of sovereignty, actually. Sovereignty is like the ability to self-govern without internal, external pressures. She's otherwise making the case that we should give up our sovereignty, become Little India, become Little China. So Little India and Little China, sorry, that Big China, Big India, don't treat us badly. Like, it actually like doesn't make any sense. And so to invert her logic, it's like, actually, for national security's sake, we shouldn't have mass immigration from China or India. And maybe we should reverse it. If the consequences of it is that the social fabric is so near breaking point that the mere argument or mere debate around mass immigration as we're presently having it could just rip it, and there goes the national security. She's actually making the case against multiculturalism. And so the broader metapolitical point here around free speech is that multiculturalism actually begets or requires, it causes the emergence of an authoritarian state, because we presently have so many groups divided amongst like racial, religious, virtually every line possible. And those divisions are increasing and entrenching in this, you know, country. At all times, these groups are constantly having like friction amongst each other, and pulling and pushing, that it requires a state to come in and use hate speech laws, use vilification laws, increase the police state to sort of duct tape and hold this multiculturalism together. It's such an artificial creation. It requires this police state to be built around it to keep it together, because these groups aren't meant to be living amongst one another, frankly. They have their own interests. For example, for many Indian Australians, their interests are firmly aligned with India. They want what's best for India and India's vital interests. And they're going to vote in Australia for India's interests. India admits this. India actually says this is a benefit of the diaspora, of Indians living abroad, is they influence foreign politics for India's benefit. So everyone's interests are like separately aligned. Indians want what's best for Indians. Chinese wants what's best for them. Everyone wants handouts for their group and their team to win. They're all in group competition. And of course, this whole time, white people are told, you're not allowed to have an identity. Everyone's Australian. Oh, you know, some Sikh guys like, yeah, everyone's Australian. I'm as Australian as Afra Deakin. But I'm also like fully loyal to India and stuff, so I'm going to vote for that. But you don't have an identity. So everyone's allowed to play this group game except Australians. And of course, Australians are like the kingmakers in this situation. Because if Australians are like actually regain their sense of self, their identity, their pride, they can, in a drop of a coin, like, no, multiculturalism is cancelled, it's over. Vote for One Nation and just like make the monoculture and multicultural bureaucracies out the window and it's done. And so that's why so much effort is spent in like keeping the white man down. And so these laws that are coming out now about hate speech and vilification, the duct tape that's trying to keep together this multicultural society, insofar as it's because of the friction between all groups in society, is particularly because of the emergence and the politicization and the activation of white racial consciousness. That's frankly what it's trying to do, is to make it illegal to advocate as a white Australian, as a European living in Australia, for your interests, for your group, just as everyone else is allowed to do it. The second you start thinking about it, you get these hate speech laws. You get, in the wake of a Bondi terrorist attack, where two Indian Muslims acting in their group's or their perceived group's self-interest carry out the execution of 15 Jews at Bondi Beach. In the wake of that, the government cracks down on the right wing, comes out of the gates talking about the far right and the right wing and Nazis, because it's not going to be the Muslims that like change the society. They're only 3% of the population anyway. It will be Australians that will do that. And so the metapolitical sort of view of what's happening isn't just that like they're trying to arrest One Nation's rise, is that they're actually trying to frankly stop what is behind One Nation's rise. Like, one step removed from that is white people's racial anxiety. That's what is being, that is what's really the threat here. And in a way, like their rise of like the white interest of like the Australians sort of saying, okay, look, we've had our fun with multiculturalism, but like our country's no better off. Actually, the consequences of this are just devastating. It's time to wrap it up. Like, what can I vote for that's going to probably do that? Not the Liberal Party. Okay, One Nation, we'll go One Nation. That's sort of the vibe that's happening right now. And so Labor's, you know, targeting both effects, the actual like party, like mechanistic democratic level, and the step remove like what's sort of propagating that. And so it's, yeah, in the shorthand way of explaining all this, simply that multiculturalism begets authoritarianism because it's an unnatural state of society. And the kingmaker is ultimately like white people. They currently hold the most, they are the majority in Australia. They hold the most social and political capital. You know, they can have the most influence, and their influence at the moment is attempting to be leveraged to sort of end multiculturalism or its expansion. People like Penny Wong have this like twisted view where it's like white people wanting to stop their country from tearing it apart, itself apart, or be torn apart by various groups and its balkanization into their territories. That's the threat to national security, not the balkanization, the emergence of these other groups and their interests to begin with, which would obviously be the view of a nationalist. That is why free speech is under attack in Australia. And that is why we need to enshrine it in our constitution. That is the demands that we made. That is why it's linked to mass immigration. Sorry, I'm so dusty still. I'm doing well, I think. I'm doing well. And that's why, like, we need it now more than ever, because now more than ever, it's under threat. Now more than ever, you know, mass immigration of the last decade has been, like, unprecedented in our history. And so now more than ever, these tensions and frictions are flaring up, that the sort of contradictions of multiculturalism are fully exposed to all Australians. And now they're willing to vote on that and try and, like, fix it. The government doesn't want to let them do that. And so they're going to go for the solution, which is, like, democracy, and for the cause, which is their own sentiments, their own racial anxieties. Someone said there's no hot chocolate in the cup. There actually is, but it's not very hot right now. It's just been sitting here. Thank you very much for watching this video all the way through. You're a true patriot. Hopefully my dustiness, having been post-rally hangover, if you can call it that, didn't get in the way of me making some convincing points. And remember, if you'd like to support me, support my work, you can of course do so by subscribing, liking, commenting, sharing this video. But you can also head to my site, www.auspil.com, where you can find other options to support me, including those which are financial, by becoming a member or making a one-off donation. You can also find my other social medias, especially those where I go live 8 p.m. Mondays and Thursdays and perform great monologues like the one you just watched. Stay Auspilled? No, okay. Maybe I won't make that the tagline, but yeah, see you next one.